Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fantastic episode of Truth Wanted. I am your host, Objectively Dan. This is the live call-in show that happens every single week, Fridays at 7 p.m. Central Time, where we talk to people about what they believe and why. And if you'd like to call us, you can totally do that. The number for that is 512-991-9242, or you can call through your computer at tiny.cc/callTW. Truth Wanted is, of course, a product of the Atheist Community of Austin, a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the promotion of atheism, critical thinking, secular humanism, and the separation of religion and government. And every single week, I always have a special guest. This week is no different. It's Demon Stride. Demon Stride, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Welcome, yes, welcome. Yes. Demon Stride, who are you?
I am an enigma. I'm a guy who enjoys debates and making things and talking to people about what they believe and why. Lately, I've been hanging out with a group of really interesting folks in some Flat Earth Discords. Hopefully, some of them are going to call in tonight.
Yes. So as you can see, I've got the Flat Earth background right now. Demon Stride has the Round Earth. So, you know, you guys comment in the live chat, you know, whose side you're on, I guess, on this thing. But yeah, I love to talk to some Flat Earthers. It's been probably about a year since we've had like a Flat Earth call from someone who genuinely has a flat earth belief. So I'd love to get into that. But of course, if you're new to this program, we don't just talk about flat earth. We talk about God. We talk about Bigfoot. We talk about aliens. We talk about pretty much any kind of belief, but especially the more interesting ones, right? So if you have a belief and you'd like to tell us about it, please consider calling the number before or the number below, or again, visiting that link on tiny.cc/callTW. And we'd love to talk to you because we got open lines right now. So Demon Stride, I am glad that you're here because we are about to talk about our comment of the week, or in our case, what we call We Want the Truth. Because every single week, folks, I always ask you guys, or I'm going to be asking you guys, I say always, this is like a new thing. We've only been doing this for a few weeks, but each week we're going to be asking you, the audience, a question that you can respond to in the comments section of the video. And next week we'll pick our favorite three responses and show them at the beginning of that episode, give you a new question for the next week. So last week we asked you, what is your favorite questionable life hack? I was excited. I'm pretty excited to see the answers for this one because I think it's an interesting question. But before we reveal our answers, Demon Stride, do you have a favorite questionable life hack?
Yeah, I'll give you two, actually. I have one that I questioned when I heard it. And then when I tried it, I was blown away. Have you ever had permanent Sharpie on anything and you know, wonder how you get it off? You can take a dry erase marker and just draw on where that Sharpie is and just wipe it right off with a napkin. The questionable one is, I live in a cold state, and I've seen that the Facebook post where take this towel, soak it in water and put it on your windshield and you won't have frost on your windshield in the morning. I have questioned whether I should trust that.
I've heard similar things to that. Now, I live in Texas, and if you know, don't count the last 2 years or so when we've been out of power, especially in the Austin area. You know, it's mostly okay to live here in the cold, right? Like, ice is very fort. Like, it happens, but like snow, like, get out of here. It almost never happens. So, you know, I haven't had to utilize it that much, but that's some good responses here. I want to see what the audience had to say about our comments. So we're going to go to our number three pick first. This is Larry Scar, who says, bend your thumb, nail to joint is about 1 inch, wrist to elbow inside is about 1 foot. Now, this is interesting to me because I have bigger hands than pretty much like anybody I know. Like, I'm a really big dude, so I don't know about the thumb thing or the arm thing. I feel like I'm just inevitably going to be way longer than everybody else, right?
I always thought it was this part of your, I always thought it was like, this part right here that's
like
the inch.
Joint?
Yeah, the joint, like, from knuckle to knuckle.
I still feel like, I bet we can't do this because we're on like two different planes of existence right now, but I almost guarantee if we lined ourselves up right now, like, it would not be even. Like, it just would. I don't know. I don't know about this. This is definitely questionable. Definitely questionable. So it did answer the prompt succinctly.
Well, I mean, it is right when it says that from wrist to elbow is about 1 foot. It is usually your 1 foot size. Like, I don't know about my foot, but you know, my foot will be 1 foot there. I don't know if your foot would be 1 foot on mine.
Yeah.
Not necessarily 12 inches, just my foot.
Yeah. I see what you're saying. But again, I also have like gigantic feet. So it's like, does that even work? What do you do if you're not my size? I don't know. It doesn't all even out, but definitely questionable, right? So let's go to number two on our list here. And this one also a questionable life hack. Elliot Webb says, ask for no salt on your French fries at fast food because they'll make a fresh batch just for you, then salt to your liking. Definitely questionable. Okay. I have made it. Listen, I don't know if you're a deontologist or a utilitarian or a consequentialist, whatever, but I have made it pretty much a goal to make the lives of fast food workers as easy as possible. Okay. And like this is violating that core principle I have. If I had to write a book on ethics, this would be part of my 10 commandments is just leave fast food workers alone. Just leave them alone. Okay. Just leave them alone. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I don't. All right. So if anything's behind the counter, I don't want to make them resent me for them making me food, but also you got to be a sadist to want to eat piping hot French fries. Come on now.
Wait, hold on. Hot French fries are good though.
Yeah. Hot, but not like fresh hot.
No, I disagree. Fresh hot, dude, because like then like when you have it hot, right? When you have it at the maximal temperature, you get to decide how hot you want it.
Like
you know
where
what I'm saying?
It burns your fingers to hold it and you know it's going to
okay, but even if it burns your fingers to hold it, you just wait a little bit and you still get to eat it at the hotness that you desire. You know what I'm saying? Because once it goes cold, you can't go back, right? You just can't.
I used to do that with the breakfast hash browns. I would go to break and on the way back to my job, I'd have to eat at the same time and I would hold the hash browns out the window and it's like, you know, middle of winter. So it'd cool it down in about a block and I could eat them.
Mm. See, that's Northerner solutions. I don't have that luxury. Okay. So count your blessings is all I'm saying. I would prefer piping hot 7 days a week. I'd be down for that.
With blisters.
Well, you know, it's a price I'm willing to pay. Honestly, it's like you ever made like pizza rolls in the microwave and then like you eat them too fast because, you know, you're hungry and you want to do it. Like I still have that mentality. I think that's what's happening right now. But regardless, we have a number one answer for this week. And this is coming from Pepper No Salt, who says, if you hear a strange noise at night while with your significant other and you're too lazy / comfortable / scared to get up and investigate, sigh and say in a slightly annoyed voice, I told my ex to leave me alone, and watch your significant other get up to go investigate the noise at once. Now, I don't know. You can only do this like once. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then I don't know. It doesn't work after that because then they know the shtick. But I am curious about this. Unfortunately, my partner does watch this show, so I can't use this on them because they're going to see this and they're going to know. But that's an interesting idea. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'm usually the one that has to go and look for the bumps in the night. I'll try it though. We'll see what the results are.
I mean, it's definitely questionable, but also a life hack. I mean, the prompt was answered here. So this was a fun question. You guys have very creative answers to this. And I'm glad that we started this segment because this is really fun. Definitely want to try to involve the community more show your stuff here. So if you like this segment and you want to participate, go ahead and comment below for the question I'm about to give right now. And we might read it on next week's show. So this week's question is going to be, in one sentence, what's the best pickup line? Period. That's it. What's the best pickup line? I don't care about your gender. I don't care how old you are. Just, you know, what's the best pickup line? What's going to be the maximal best for you in your situation? I want to know. So comment below. And that's also going to be what I'm looking forward to. I want to see what you guys have for that. But we are, of course, Truth Wanted. This is a call-in show, and we'll get to calls in a bit here. But I want to talk to you more, Demon Stride, about who you are. I mean, you are an enigma. You are a mysterious being. I know you like to debate. Do you spend a lot of time doing debates in that way? Are you making creative stuff online? Like, what's, you know, what are you all about?
I'm trying to get into the creative online space. I would love to have more debates. Maybe some people can follow us to the Discord later and we'll meet up there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I work a regular job. I'm just a regular guy.
Man. Okay. Well, you know, I know that you've been talking to people online about their beliefs and what they believe in stuff. I know, as we mentioned earlier, you talked to flat earthers in particular, which, by the way, folks at home, again, if you're a flat earther who wants to call in because Devin Stride told you to do it, now's the chance to call in because we're going to get the calls in a bit. So get in line because I want to talk to you guys. But like, what other beliefs have you been talking to people about?
It really runs the gambit of everything from, I mean, it's not just the shape of the earth. It's why physics works the way it does. Some of the beliefs are, it's not gravity and it's an electrostatic force, essentially, because you can measure the electrostatics as you go up. And the idea, I guess, is that this is what's causing the electrons and everything to have its what appears to be gravity. But yeah, also, you know, one of the religious ones was with my friend Kiwi. We did one about Noah's Ark and Ron Wyatt discovering Noah's Ark in Turkey. And that was a fruitful debate. But
yes, I remember the Noah's Ark in Turkey thing. It's kind of like this weird cultural thing. And I think the origins of that, right, is like National Geographic or something did like a mini doc in like the 90s or something. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And like, is that the origins of that? Do you know off the top of your head?
I think Ron Wyatt is the most popular one that did that because he actually got airtime. There was actual footage and you know, broadcast time spent on it.
Yeah. Like I've seen that claim specifically online. Like, oh, you know, they found Noah's Ark, you know, it's just in Turkey. And it's just like, well, that's crazy. It's just been like hanging out there and we haven't like done anything about that. But yeah, that is interesting. And also you brought up claims about physics. I find to be fascinating because there's so like I would hate being a professional physicist and being public about that because the emails they must get must be the most ridiculous BS you've ever seen in your life because it's never simple, right? If like if you believe in a God, you can say that in one sentence. If you believe like I don't know, the ether is a phenomenon that exists and affects our physical reality, like you if you believe that, you have a reason. Right. Like you must have some sort of mathematical equations or some BS to kind of like support that. And that gets like very complicated very fast. So like when people call about that kind of stuff, it's like, I don't know, man. I just don't think that's true. I don't know that it gets into some tricky territory there. Right.
Yeah. The ether is the running. That is one of the running paradigms right now or cosmologies for the flat earth side, I should say.
Yeah. So like, well, tell me about that because flat earth encompasses really, if you look at the flat earth community, in my experience, and this is purely anecdotal, there is like an interesting cosmology of beliefs, I would say. You never just believe in the flat earth. You also believe like NASA is a hoax or the, you know, space that is actually, a part of, you know, God's creation, right? It's part of the, I can't even remember the word off the top of my head, but you know, it's kind of like a shell that we're under. We're not actually
the dome.
Yes. So that's what I'm looking for. You know, we're under a dome and you know, that's, you know, lots of other kinds of beliefs. Like, is that true in your experience as well, that there's kind of like a multitude there?
Yeah. And everyone's a little different. And one of the things I'd like to like at least put out there is these people are not stupid by any means. I've heard some very interesting conversations from them, and the reasons why they have them, I think, are the more interesting.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that they are true, but how you get to that mindset.
It's weird that there's been like, I feel like this has declined, but the flat earth and the flat earth communities were like popping off a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah.
Getting millions of views. Talk Heathen even had a clip that got to 1 million views because it was a flat earth call. Like it was just really popping off at the time. People were talking about it, and the conventions have sprung up within the past decade that did not exist before. But I don't know. I feel like I haven't seen as many people talk about it anymore. Do you think it was just like a trend, or do you think like they're still like, well, they're still going strong?
Unless you're actively looking for it, there are algorithms that do suppress conspiracies or, you know, I mean, they kind of fall in that same line. So you have to really look for it and try and be a part of it if you want to, you know, see it. But otherwise, it's usually at the very last Google search when you look for it. You really got to dig.
Yeah, that's true. It's like, you know, I think part of the response that web publishers and like web platforms have had to the rise of other kinds of conspiracy theories, not just flat earth, but that right. included, has changed the way we view information, right? And like talk about it and process it. So like, yeah, probably the algorithms have hampered that rise. I wonder if no change have happened, what that community would look like today. Would it be even bigger than it is right now?
I think it might be smaller, actually. If there wasn't somebody actively trying to suppress their ideas, maybe you wouldn't have such a community that's so tightly knit and clings together.
Yeah. I think that's probably always going to be there, though, right? Like, even before things were popping off, there were always flat earthers. I think, like, just the internet kind of accelerated that belief, you know, to where it is today. And it'll probably always be a facet of the internet, right? I don't think it's ever going to go away. Right. I just don't think, like, to me, when I hear people talk about flat earth, it was like, oh, yeah, that's the thing that people were talking about, like, 5 years ago. I don't even think of it as a recent phenomenon, any, you know, it's kind of like yesterday's fun conspiracy, right?
But well, I hope some of them call in so you can get flat smacked.
I hope so too. Actually, it looks like in the queue we have a flat earther who wants to talk to us, so we might just get to that in just a second. But before we do, I always have to thank the patron of the week, because every single week I always try to give a shout out to someone who donates on Patreon. I do not receive any of that money. Demon Stride does not receive any of the money, nor any of the other hosts. This goes towards the show, and specifically goes towards the Atheist Community of Austin. So thank you to everybody who donates on that Patreon, and that's tiny.cc/patreontw if you want to support the show. That lets the ACA know that, hey, Truth Wanted is a show that's worth supporting. So this week's patron of the week is going to be JP Young. Thank you so much, JP Young, and thank you to everybody that donates on the Patreon. You guys rock. And with that out of the way, Demon Stride, I think it's time we talk to some people. You want to talk to some people?
Absolutely.
Cool. Let's do it. We got I'm gonna return this person back to the queue, because that was not the flat earth call. This is the flat earth call. We got Shane, who's calling in from Massachusetts. Shane, you are live on Truth Wanted. What's up?
Welcome.
Hey, Dr. Dan and Demon Stride, what's up, guys?
How's it going, man?
Going good. Enjoying the Friday. It's been pretty chill so far. So what's up?
Well, Demon Stride's one of my new online Discord buddies. We discuss this shit like all day long. Him on the opposing side. But yeah, I wanted to call in and show him some support. Also, Dan, you got a goofy ass straw man behind you. Did you know that?
Okay, so here's what you need to know, Shane. There's a reason why Demon Stride is laughing, is because he literally told me before the like 10 minutes before the show started, when I put this as a background, that I was going to get called out and say that this isn't actually a reflection of flat earthers' beliefs. So that is very interesting you point that out.
Yeah, you bastard, dude. Demon Stride. He knows that's nonsense. Space pizza disc floating in nothing. We don't actually subscribe to the concept of space as it's relayed. We don't think it's a place you can go, as NASA likes to lie to us all the time. So to put it in space is kind of like a double jibe, and it's also building a straw man to attack that isn't actually our position.
Yeah, I mean, I could argue that maybe this is more subscribe to other kinds of beliefs. I mean, you have to agree that the flat earth community has a pretty varied ideas about what exactly the cosmology of our universe is. So I would argue at least one flat earther probably thinks this is the case.
Zero.
But you think zero. It's absolutely zero.
Zero.
Okay. Well, you know, you're more involved in the flat earth community than I am, so I can take your word for it for right now. But Shane, here, let's get to the bottom of this. Okay. I don't believe that the earth is flat, and you do. Why do you think the earth is flat?
Well, I mean, every basic observation, everything you see, let's try this. Why do you think the seasons happen?
Why do I think the seasons happen? Well, I think that's an interplay between the earth's relationship with the sun. I think it has to deal with things like the axial tilt, and also how the earth orbits around the sun. But that is pretty much my idea of it. I'm not a physicist or an astronomer by any means, but that's kind of the idea I have. Do you agree with that, Demon Stride? I mean, or do you have a more specific idea?
Yeah, no, that pretty much falls in line.
Okay, so there we go.
So yeah, your answer would be like the axial parallelism, right? So the 23.4 degree tilt of your space ball as it circles around the sun at 66,600 miles per hour, you know, motion without you chasing this around. So that spin and tilt actually is what creates your season. So you have the parallel reach from the sun on its approach to the sun hitting the northern hemisphere and then hitting the southern hemisphere on its retreat from the sun and its elliptical orbit. And that's what gives you sun, you know, summer into fall into winter into spring. But that's ridiculous and absurd and reification of like four different things that haven't been proved, including gravity and a whole bunch of other things. And our explanation is, you know, elegantly simple and easy. The sun circulates from the Tropic of Cancer to the Tropic of Capricorn, and it goes further away when it's at the Tropic of Capricorn. Here in Massachusetts in the north, we have winter, and when it's up here in next to us over the Tropic of Cancer, we have summer. Super easy.
So, like, why do you think then... Oh, sorry, keep going. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Because explanations like that are more simple for a flat earther than they are for a heliocentric believer.
Interesting how you define simplicity there, because I agree that, like, intuitively, if you look up at the sky and you don't know anything about physics or anything how the world works, yeah, it does look like the sun just kind of moves around the earth. But I think if you propose the ideas that scientists have been proposing for centuries, which is that the earth does in fact rotate and is a body of matter in space, and therefore has, you know, relationships with other bodies of matter in space, I actually think it makes sense. I actually think the observations that we have today and the things that we've been able to accomplish make even less sense under a flat earth model. For example, like satellites. I have no idea how the hell satellites would work under a flat earth model. Or really anything that involves, you know, geotagging any technology that works on the assumption that we can have coordinates on a grid on the earth, you know?
Well, I mean, like, so you mentioned celestial bodies and planets and things, and you mentioned satellites, and we'll get to satellites and, you know, 98% of the internet running through undersea cables after this. But if you want to talk about, like, prediction of gravitational influences, there are actually no predictions that can be made with the Kepler equations that run that for planetary bodies, because you have limitations like the three-body problem, where you can't predict the gravitational influence of more than three bodies in a system. It actually breaks down mathematically. AIs and supercomputers can't predict it. And then the way to solve it, the way all the physicists solve it, the way you're taught to solve it, is to simplify it. So essentially you're changing all the parameters of the proposed three-body problem. You're simplifying it to a series of two-body problems. And doing this is how they got, say, the path of our solar system and the elliptical orbits of our planets. So you have broken down three-body problem into just, say, Earth and the Sun, Venus and the Sun, Mars and the Sun, Jupiter and the Sun, and so on, to get our perfect elliptical solar system. But mathematically, nobody can actually predict that. The math doesn't work.
I've been talking for a bit now. Demon Stride, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. I guess what I wonder is, what is it that causes the sun to rotate above the plane of the earth? Like, is there something, you know, holding the sun and causing it to shift between the different the cancers? And
yeah, I don't actually know what's suspending it up there, right? So it's moving around the earth the way it is and the way it always has been, following the lines within the tropics to create the seasons as it always has. I mean, what's your explanation for the analemma? So talking about the sun's path and the sun's reach.
Oh, the analemma, what refresh?
Yeah, the wonderful infinity symbol that you get from photographing the sun every year, every day for a year, the same position, right, with the fat bottom infinity symbol.
Right. I mean, that's explainable in the globe model as well. So.
Well, yeah, but I'm asking you what that explanation is, Demon Stride. Come on.
The explanation is you're taking a picture of the sun from a different point in the orbit around the sun. So you're getting a shifted position.
So why is it elongated on the bottom and not on top and not equidistant?
I believe the elongation is because it's an elliptical orbit. So it's not just a perfect circle. If it was a perfect circle, I would imagine it would just look, you know, like an oval, and it wouldn't be more elongated on one of the ends.
Fair enough. That's a valid answer, right? In your model, that would be what they say it is. The speeding, the changing speeds of the earth in its elliptical orbit creates the patternization of the sun doing that. And in flat earth, it's similar. You know, it has either more distance to go in the southern hemisphere with the bigger concentric circle than it does in the north. Therefore, you have an elongated bottom. But it also changes in height, right, to give us the equinox and the solstice and all the crazy light patterns that we get on Earth.
Anything that, I mean, I'm like, I still don't understand, right? Like, again, I'll go back to, like, satellites, for example. like the information that we get, that entire technology, like how that works. Does a flat Earth model really account for every single advancement that we've had in space technology, or is it all a lie? Like, what does that even mean under a flat Earth worldview?
I mean, technology is real. Cell phone tower triangulation is real. Ground positioning radar systems are real. Tracking real time is certainly real. Satellites orbiting 1 billion miles an hour in space in super synchronistic orbit, not so real, right? You remember the super spy satellite that was from China circling across the entire U.S. recently? Do you remember how the uproar that caused?
That wasn't a satellite, though. That was a balloon.
Oh, I see. I hate to tell you, but that's mostly satellites, man, right there.
Really? That's satellites. They're just balloons. Mm. So all satellite TV comes from balloons.
Yeah, the problem I would have with
TV, man. I don't have TV.
Sorry. Wait. Okay, but wait. How does that work then? How do satellite TVs work?
I don't know. I don't have a satellite TV. I haven't looked into satellite TV.
Don't you think that's a big deal? Wait, hold on, Deep and Stride. I got to know this. How do you think satellites actually do things? Because, okay, let's say you're right. Let's say all satellites are balloons. So they just keep inflating the balloons in the air and it never stops? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, no. So satellites aren't anything to do with things in space. They're ground-based systems, just like cell phone towers are ground-based systems, just like the internet is 98% underground sea cable. So there's nothing really having to do circulating above you that would make satellites work.
It's a ground-based system. That's interesting. Where are these systems at?
What do you mean?
You said they're ground-based systems. What does that mean? Where are these at? Can you show me what these look like?
Do you think we need satellites to talk on the internet right now? Do you think you need satellites to talk on your cell phone?
You do need satellites to do some cell phone communication, yes. And you do need satellites for other kinds of communication as well, yeah.
So then what do cell phone towers do? What's their purpose?
Well, cell phone towers work on electromagnetic frequency to connect devices together, but cell phone towers have not always existed in history. Satellites have existed before cell phone towers.
Really?
Yes.
Have existed before satellites do. Like, they have a whole bunch of operations going way back from the military plotting how they would use satellites as satellites.
Okay, but you know satellite TV was a thing before cell phones, right?
No, man, I don't know. I don't know a lot about satellite TV.
I think you should look into that, because that is a big problem for me, because like the fact that satellites orbit the Earth and we are able to bounce those signals off of those bodies in space, like, is almost one of the biggest things in my belief that, yeah, the Earth is round, because otherwise that doesn't make any sense. I don't know how that technology functions or works.
How do you know they're orbiting the Earth? How do you know that their position is as accurate as is radiating down to you? Do you have a transceiver? Have you tested the code? Did you see where the actual signal is being transmitted from? Compared it with the coordinates to make sure it's actually how many miles up?
You can see, there are internet sites that track satellites. And not only that, you can go in at night and see satellites orbiting the Earth. If you want to know where the International Space Station is at, you can literally do that at any time. And you can follow that path all around the Earth.
So for satellites to be real, right, you have to have them up there matching the Earth's orbit, meaning that the Earth actually rotates. Do you know how and when and if anyone's ever proved that the Earth actually rotates?
Well, I mean, if you had to prove that the Earth rotates, I mean, like, I think it's demonstrable by the fact that there are days, and days wouldn't exist. There are planets out there that don't have the same days that we do, because they're geo-locked with the sun, or not our sun, but other solar systems, right? Like the moon, the reason why we see the same moon faces is because it rotates in a way that actually matches the way that we face the Earth, and the same goes with other star systems.
So you're saying that because everyone sees the same face of the moon and it's both an orbiting body with a face lock, that's proof that it's actually moving? That's more proof that it's not moving, actually.
Why would you say that?
Well, why would you think that an orbiting body facing us, wouldn't we see all sides of the moon? First of all, the impracticality of it being phase locked to us. So the actual explanation is we don't actually see any other side of the moon. We all simultaneously see the same side of the moon. Right. Why do you think that means that it is proved
well,
that orbiting around?
First of all, everybody on Earth sees the same parts of the moon at all times, right? Because the moon can appear in the sky for some people and isn't in the sky for other people because it's going around the Earth. In a flat Earth worldview, I don't know why the moon would like go away, but I mean, maybe it could. Demon Stride's like, yeah. Oh, he knows an answer to this, but
yeah, I'm not going to give his answer.
He does.
Right?
But he does. That, he that, knows, that he would knows be your... answer.
But again, I'm talking a lot here. Demon Sprite, you got to jump in. This is your debate partner, Shane. You guys got beef, okay? You guys go back, so I don't know.
No, we're the not. Problem I, have with, I run a debate server, and I made him a moderator there. Sorry, go ahead.
The only problem I see with satellites and satellite TV, being balloons or whatever, the satellite dishes generally point to a one spot in the sky, right? So I don't know how that could be explained by, balloons in orbit. There would have to be a balloon going up and then getting traded off with another balloon, signals dying off. So I don't know. I don't know how that would work on a flat Earth.
Yeah, I mean, satellites aren't really the biggest size of punk. It's really easy. But you're saying that you don't know how the moon would go away, or how the assertion that nighttime debunks flat Earth always gets to me. That one's really funny. Like flat Earth hasn't figured out why day turns to night, right? It turns to night. Well, I didn't account for that. Holy cow, the Earth must be a ball. No, it's because the local sun causes the same effect. It goes, closer and further away, and it brings its light with it. You can't see forever when, the Earth is circling over flat Earth, just like the moon is. And it gets to a point where it brings its light with it.
That wasn't what Demon Stride was saying, though. He's saying if you look at every ground-based, the actual satellite dishes, they're pointing up to the sky, right?
Generally, in the hemisphere that they're on, they're all pointing to the same point in the sky.
Right. So how does that make any sense in a flat Earth? What are they doing if the Earth is flat?
Can you guys find me a non-computer generated image of a satellite in space real quick? Go ahead. I'll wait.
I mean, I've seen one with my own eyes before. I was in New Mexico, and I could see it moving all the way across the sky, and then it vanished right before the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, satellite technology has been around since, I'm pretty sure, the 60s at least, right? So when dishes are on Earth, what are they pointing to? What is actually happening? When a TV or any other device is connected to a satellite, what does that mean in your worldview?
Nothing. I mean, it's connected to the internet, receiving the same signals that I'm using to talk to you right now, right? No satellite.
No
internet. No satellites required for triangulation.
What are the ground-based dish? What are they pointing to? Why would they be pointing out into the dome?
Well, you know what the ionosphere is?
The ionospheres, yes.
Yeah. Right. So in your model, that's what they say when we have radio signals bouncing too far off from two distant objects that wouldn't be possible through Earth's curvature. They say that they're actually rebounding off the ionosphere to get to that super distant point, and therefore negating the point of Earth's curvature. So when you say if signals can't be bounced off the ionosphere, if you are pointed up there, it makes sense that you could receive a signal from a tower or a mountain or across the plane from pointing it up and getting the rebound.
So let me understand what you're saying. You're saying satellite dishes point up to the ionosphere, and the ionosphere brings that message back?
Well, I'm saying that it's possible that that's what's happening, because when they used the radio frequency towers to send transmissions across the ocean, and they said, no way it'll make it because the Earth's curved and there's no way that signal will reach it. They actually, when it did reach it, they said, no, it's not that the Earth's flat, it's that we're bouncing signals off the ionosphere to reach that super far distant point. So to reflect that this, to receive some...
Well, I'm trying to understand in your worldview. So the ionosphere exists in your worldview.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Wow. Where does that come
the
from?
Dome?
Yeah, we call
is that the dome?
Is the ionosphere is literally the firmament?
Could be. It's certainly the rebounding practicality that the ionosphere is said to have would be accomplished by our firmament. Sure. Send the signal up, rebound it off. Right. It's a parabolic arc.
Okay, that's interesting. So what about the other spheres? Because, there's multiple atmospheres, right? Do you believe all of those exist too?
Multiple layers of atmosphere? I mean, we don't believe that you can have gas pressure without containment leading right up by a density gradient up to the total vacuum of space. The pressure gradient density doesn't really allow for that. But we do believe there's different layers of varying density as a gradient as you go up. Why wouldn't we accept that?
Because you also said you don't believe in gravity, so I don't know how that works. And also, the ionosphere has I'm not an expert, but I'm pretty sure there's charged particles up there that wouldn't be there if we didn't have a magnetic core, for example, which I don't know if you believe there's a core. Maybe you do, but...
Well, we do believe in magnetism, certainly. Everything is electromagnetic. We don't believe in the gigantically flawed geodynamo model that you think produces the magnetic field of Earth. because that doesn't line up with the measurements on the South Pole and the North Pole. But you did mention gravity, and gravity is a fun one, right? Gravity doesn't exist. There is no gravity. There is an accepted measured downward acceleration, 9.8 meters a second. It's not the same everywhere. It's just been agreed upon average. The causal relationship between gravity and that downward acceleration has never been proven, has never been tested, has never been experimented to prove that that's what it is. And our alternative viable theory for that would be electrostatic downward acceleration, where the downward acceleration vector is caused by electricity because Earth has a negative charge by default. And as you go up, there's a measured identifiable voltage gradient in the atmosphere, 100 volts a meter all the way up. And the top is positively charged, with the Earth being negatively charged. And because of that gradient, we can assume that we have actually two Gaussian surfaces between us. That's the only way you get a voltage gradient of that nature. And the downward acceleration is just the non-zero downward vector caused by electrostatic that determines the general direction of down, and then density, buoyancy, and viscosity sort everything else out.
Okay, so a lot of things there. So electrostatic forces are responsible for our downward movement towards the Earth.
Yeah. So it doesn't push you down. It's not the force of down. It just determines the downward direction. That's how everyone establishes down.
Do you believe there are materials on Earth that don't react to electrostatic forces?
Well, everything is electrostatic. Everything is electromagnetic. In your worldview, everything is made up of electrons. And if electrons represent electricity, then show me an item that doesn't have electrons, right? Everything is inherently electrostatic. You know, hair, glass, wood, everything.
Mm, okay. Interesting. Everything reacts in response to a magnetic field, I guess. But that's interesting that across all objects on Earth, we all have the same reaction to it, unless you don't think that. Everyone wants to hear more from Demon Stride. I'm looking at the chat here. Demon Stride, you got to speak up, man.
Is it possible for you to manipulate this downward direction or maybe the vector itself by adjusting the electrostatics with an external device like a battery?
It is entirely possible. We do it all the time with a Van de Graaff generator. We change the charge of a piece of human hair or a piece of glass or a piece of wood, and it goes up from down. We've changed the downward acceleration bias from down to up just by changing the voltage.
I've not seen the piece of glass or the wood being levitated with the voltage yet. Can you tell me where I can find that?
Yeah, sure. We'll find it. You guys have a chat or something now. I'll find it. I'll get it to you, man. It's definitely been done, right? There's a nice Dave Weiss video who he goes around on everyone's podcast and shows this exact experiment, which he, you know, detected and definitely uses human hair and wood filings and non-magnetic iron and all sorts of different materials that jump from the bottom of the pan to the top when the charges change, showing that you can actually manipulate the downward vector by changing the charge.
Yeah, wood filings, definitely different than wood. But you said glass as well. They didn't use glass.
Yeah, I mentioned things that you would argue are never electrostatic by nature, because specifically in your worldview, if everything has electrons and everything is electrostatic, right? That's the way I connect it. But in our world, everything is incoherently electrostatic, you know, everything. And electromagnetism is the only force. So electricity can't be separated from magnetism and vice versa.
Right. So it appears like this will never be a solvable issue from your worldview, because I mean, if it's explainable by gravity and by electrostatics, what do you use to determine that it is electrostatic?
Well, we're providing an alternative causation relationship to replace the lack of causation relationship proved by the non-experiment of the globe, right? There is what experiment has proved that the downward acceleration is in fact this mysterious pseudo force, not force, called gravity.
What experiment has shown gravity exists?
Yes.
Like, I mean, dropping stuff. I don't know. Like, I don't know what you want from
there
that.
There was an experiment they did with the plumb bob in a mountain, and that's how they got the weight of the world, by calculating the size of the mountain and how much the plumb bob deviated towards the mass of the mountain versus a perpendicular 90 to the ground. They were able to show an attraction between masses.
That's not how they got the mass of Earth. Demon's tried Newton's first law of gravitation, you know, F1 equals M1 over M2 over R squared, really is the mass of two bodies. You would need the mass of Earth to get the gravitational attraction between mass and the sun. However, they got the mass of Earth by totally guessing and assuming it was about the same size as Venus on a Venus transit. That's how they got the mass. It's ridiculous. Not to mention that it was just taken from Coulomb's law, which is the same equation with an inverse proportionate relationship to mass. So if Newton's equation is proportionate to mass, Coulomb's law of electromagnetic forces is inversely proportional to mass, and literally is just the same effect. So if you have the electromagnetic force being, even by your world, declared 10 to the 36th power more powerful than gravity, and gravity being a weak force, I think it's more, you know, inducive to logic to say that electromagnetism causes the downward acceleration vector more than anything than this non-proven gravity.
What experiment, besides the levitation one, can you prove or show that explains this downward acceleration?
You mean besides proving that if you change the voltage, it changes the downward vector?
I don't know if that would be good enough.
That's an experiment, right? Controlled variable, independent variable. You have a control and you change the voltage and the effect is isolated. Therefore, you've caused the reaction, right? There's no suitable replacement relationship for the causation of gravity.
What about if we sent an astronaut to space and, you know, they were suddenly free floating when they were orbiting the Earth?
Well, they do something called the parabolic flight with a vomit comet, and they go up and down in a plane, you know, high altitude, and they get about 30 seconds of what they call non-gravity, and then they film stuff and send it to you and tell them that they're in space. If you watch those things, they're full and riddled with all sorts of errors. And plus, they run into things that they call pickup pockets of gravity, where they just suddenly hit the bottom and hit the wall, but whatever.
But Shane, they have live footage of people in the ISS that you can just, like, look at. Are they it there every day? They're just waking up in the studio?
Yeah.
Just
oh, yes.
Okay.
All CGI, virtual reality. They have what's called augmented reality. That's what it is. Literally, they do children's shows. Honestly, NASA is Disney for adults. You guys watch that and you're dazzled and you love it, and it's nothing. It means nothing. It's all fake.
What about every other space agency on Earth? They're all faking it too?
They're all run by the same people, to be honest, and it goes into other conspiracies. If you guys look into the families and who controls the world and where the foundings of NASA came from Operation Paperclip after World War II, when we took all the Nazis from World War II, after we didn't execute them, we made them run a space program. By the way, they also run our propaganda program, so you should look into Joseph Goebbels and all that shit. And they're the ones that started NASA like in the late 50s. So they're the ones running the whole organization across the world. All the symbols for all the space agencies have the same symbolic nature, if you want to look that up.
Yes. Okay. Interesting. Well, I'll be honest with you, Shane. We've given you a lot of time, more than I typically do with calls, because, again, we want to prioritize folks of your belief. I've got like six other people in the queue, though, and we got to get back to it. One more question, though.
Dan,
you've got one more question before you go, though, because you said electromagnetism, I believe, is the only fundamental force.
I'm comparing electromagnetism to gravity and the comparable power of the force, because even in your model, they say gravity is a weak force and electromagnetism is 10 to the 36 power times more powerful than gravity.
Okay, but as far as like fundamental forces, do you believe like the strong nuclear force and the weak nuclear force are a thing?
Yes.
Okay, so those three exist, but not gravity.
Well, yeah, not gravity. Gravity, what other weak forces are there?
The weak nuclear force.
Right. Yeah, no, gravity doesn't actually exist. You can explain it with electrostatic downward acceleration and everything else. That's the only one that I would question, right?
Okay. Well, again, I don't have, that's all I really wanted to know, because we don't have any time left. We got to get to some other callers. But
Shane,
appreciate you calling in. Definitely an interesting conversation. I hope you have a good rest of your day. Demon Stride. This is a topic that you've engaged with Shane for a long time. What are your thoughts on this conversation?
Well, this is it's an ever evolving conversation. I don't know. I honestly sometimes I can't quite follow the logic that's being put down. So for me, I get stuck a lot of the time in the first part before I can get to the end. And I'm slowly working there. I'm trying to get an understanding of each one of these beliefs that people hold and why they hold that. Like I said, every single person's different. Everyone's got a different reason for why they would. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there was some moments there where it's like, I'm not sure I entirely understand what's being said. And that's not to say that everything he's saying is wrong. It's like, look, if you want to convince me, you got to slow it down a little bit. You know what I mean? Like, I understand the strategy of saying, oh, here's a bunch. We got to talk about the three body problem in physics. And then we also have to talk about parabolic flight patterns and everything. It's like, yeah, okay, I get it. That may be intuitive to your community. But I guarantee most people watching this are probably going to be like, huh, what? And then it's like, you're not convincing anybody. So if you want to be convincing, I would say you got to take it slow. Because
Dan, the problem you're having is you don't understand everything about your model. So if you can't answer that, you know, why do you hold that model? You have a faith-based belief there.
That, and you know what? And that's the thing too, right? I think if you're in a community that is really into the terminology and is really into, you know, throwing this stuff at people, then yeah, people are going to be confused and they're not going to know exactly what to say because maybe they haven't thought about that specific instance of a model before. And I think that's totally valid. I think that actually lends credence to someone who has that kind of beliefs idea because like, ah, see, this person can't give a direct response to that answer. And if they do give a direct response, then you can just throw something else at them, you know? So it's like you win either way. But anyway, that was an interesting conversation. We've got a lot of other folks who want to talk to us. But first, before we do that, I have to tell you guys about some of the other shows that we have at the ACA. So check it out.
The annual penis festival and they have big penis floats that people carry around on their shoulders. You get penis shaped lollipops and it's a big turnout.
Well, I went hiking last Saturday and I was in Bastrop, Texas, trying to just enjoy nature. And I kept looking at my phone because I wanted to know what's up with the Alaskan UFO thing.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, Lauren Boebert, and that other white guy, and some other white guys.
Y'all have an accent.
Don't have an accent.
In New King James, though, it does say, "I am bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh, which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die."
Uh-huh.
So right. Everything.
No, right?
So God, that's a God right. quote.
If God creates people that he knows are not going to be saved, why do that if they're just going to be, you know, destroyed ultimately?
I do believe that God created a certain people to be saved and God created a certain people to be damned in hell.
Yikes.
And we are back to the program here. I'm here with Deben Stride, and we just had a Flat Earth call. And Deben Stride, we've got some other Flat Earthers that want to talk to us. Oh. So we might just make this, and there's some other topics too, but I don't know. This might just be a Flat Earth themed episode here, depending on how many people want to call in and talk about it. But real quickly, just so you guys know, if you are going to be in the Austin area tomorrow, we are doing our auditions for new hosts and new crew members for the Atheist Community of Austin. In particular, we're looking for folks who are at least able to make it to the studio on a somewhat regular basis, at least a monthly basis. But if you're going to show up there, you know, we'll take you in. We'll see what you got. I am going to be there. I am going to be helping with the hosting auditions. We are, of course, really looking for crew members. That is our top need. But we are looking for host talent as well. So if you're interested in that, I am going to be there. And come check us out. And also, if you are going to be in the studio this weekend, you might as well check out our live shows, which are happening on Sunday for Talk Heathen and Atheist Experience, because I am going to be hosting both. That's right. I'm on both shows. Kara Griffin is going to be with me on Talk Heathen, and Johnny P. Angel will be joining me on the Atheist Experience. So come check it out. Doors open at noon for that. The event, of course, is always free. And I'd love to see you. Love to meet you. I've been, ever since the library's been open again, I've got to talk to a whole bunch of people. Last time we were in studio with Truth Wanted, I talked to somebody who is from Maine who said they wanted to come talk to me. And it's like, wow, that is crazy. Like, he had some business trip stuff going on. So, like, I wasn't top priority, but it's like, man, it wows me every time that you guys want to talk to me. And I think it's great. So come check it out and would love to meet you. But with that out of the way, oh, one more thing, though, I will mention, if you want to get more information on that, or you have questions or comments, whatever you want to send to the crew or the folks at the ACA, you should email the show for tv@atheist-community.org. If you want to email this show specifically, it's truth@atheist-community.org. So check that out if you haven't already. And Deben Stride, I think we're going to go back to Flat Earth. Is that okay?
It's perfectly fine.
Okay. We got another call about Flat Earth. We got Jim. Jim, who's calling in from Indiana. Jim, you're live on Truth Wanted. What's up?
Not necessarily Flat Earth. You know, I was going to think maybe viruses or health or bacteria. I just wanted to make a comment. Deben Stride and I are going to have a nice little talk on the 11th of March on Tartaria. We're going to have a nice little fireside chat, which I'm looking forward to. I'd actually like to talk, other than making a comment about no flat earther or no stationary topographical plane person believes that picture behind you of the Earth that is flat, tilted, and with water coming off of it. So shame on you for doing that, because obviously the other photo is the fake globe that we've been taught since Copernicus, if not Hermes Trismegistus, going back all the way to then. So what you did to the flat Earth community was shameful, because you've allowed the globe, which everybody's been brainwashed with since age 5, and then you put that PSYOP, which is that disc at a little bit of an angle with water falling off the sides. That is a total misrepresentation.
You're right, Jim.
You should take that down.
Shame on me. No, Jim, you're right. Shame on me for putting a picture of a flat Earth behind me when talking about the flat Earth. You're right. That's, we don't want to talk. I mean, this right here, that's a flat Earth, but that's not your flat Earth, right? But
What does your flat Earth look like, Jim?
My friend, it's nobody's in the flat Earth community, flat Earth. Nobody's in the flat Earth community, flat Earth. It is the globe's depiction to make us look silly from the Flat Earth Society, which started in 1971. So it's not my flat Earth. It's no flat Earther's flat Earth. So you should be ashamed that you even said that. Now let's talk.
Jim, I'll be real with you. Period. The globe, listen, people who believe in the globe, they're not what's making the flat Earth community look bad. All right. I'm going to be 100% honest with you.
I can agree with that. There are some flat Earthers. There are some flat Earthers that shouldn't be discussing flat Earth, because one, we don't live on a flat Earth. There's topographical ups and downs to it. And Earth, we're 71% water at least. And Earth is the land that comes out of the water. So flat Earth is a total misrepresentation. It's a total psyop. It's more of a stationary topographical plane, because Michelson-Morley and every experiment after Michelson-Morley basically tells us we're stationary. We are topographical. We're basically a plane. So it's STP and not a flat Earth. So all I would suggest, if you want to be intellectually honest with us, you'll get rid of that disc in space.
I want to point out, though, that disc, that the image behind them, there's no water going off of that flat Earth, because it's being contained by an ice wall. Those lines you see is the upward movement of the disc.
No, I saw, when you were talking to Shane, I saw water coming off of that disc.
He hasn't changed the image at all. It's been the same static image at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, Jim, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. There are people in history who have believed that the model that I have behind me is correct. And I stand by the idea that, there's at least one person out there that believes that this is what the Earth looks like. You don't have to believe that. And the majority of the flat Earth community doesn't have to believe that. But I'm not going to pretend like this isn't a conception that people have had in their minds, because it definitely is.
Do you think the Flat Earth Society was flat Earth, or do you think it was controlled opposition?
Do I think the Flat Earth Society is controlled opposition, or do I think they're legitimate?
Do you think the Flat Earth Society is legit flat earthers, or do you think it's controlled opposition to make flat Earth look bad?
I think they're sincere, honest believers. I have no real evidence to suggest that it's controlled opposition. I'd be interested in seeing it.
Okay. As a globe earther, you can say that. Just like as a globe earther, you can put that depiction of the flat Earth behind you and have all kinds of fun with it, when the thing that's the round ball has never been proven to exist empirically or through physical evidence, but you can go ahead and believe it if you want to. Now, Demon.
That's right. That's America, baby. That's what it's all about. You know what I mean? I'm expressing my First Amendment rights.
But there is a physical evidence of this globe in the blue marble photo. It's an actual tangible negative you can witness. There's no CGI needed, and it's physical.
If you want to go by photos, they were doing Photoshop back in the 1800s. So good for you that you can look at a photo and say it's a ball. It doesn't measure a ball. It doesn't look like a ball when we're here on Earth. On the terrestrial, which is the Earth, it does not look like a ball. You have to go into the sky with NASA to look like a ball. Do you disagree?
Do you have a picture of the flat Earth?
That is a total misnomer. You cannot go further south than the 60th parallel latitude, according to the Antarctic Treaty, signed December 1st, 1959, went into effect 1961. You can't go any closer than 500 miles to the North Pole. It measures stationary as far as Michelson-Morley, and it's topographical, and it's basically a plane. We don't have a photo. But you know what you don't have? You don't have a ball. You don't have a sphere. You don't have a planet. You don't have an oblate spheroid.
Jim,
you have nothing.
Jim. Tim, what if you went past it? Let's say you could go past it. Let's say there was no treaty signed and you were free to go past it. What would it look like going backwards? Hey, like
here's the great question that here's the great question that you gave Shane. You said if. Now, if you want to deal in hypotheticals as an adult and say if, then I'm not going to play that game. If doesn't get you in, if you can go into space, if you can go south of the 60th parallel, if I was 7 feet tall, I could dunk a basketball in the NBA and make $40 million a year.
Listen, but hey, not necessarily. Not necessarily. You got to have talent for that. It's not just about being tall. I know this as a tall person. I suck at basketball, right? But look, Jim, I'm just saying, Jim, first of all, people deal in ifs every day of their lives. I don't know why you think that's a childish thing, because I'm sure you would ask me, well, if the globe is real, then what about X, Y, and Z? I mean, we just had that conversation with Shane. So I don't know. I don't know why you think that's childish. But beyond that, right, if you have a model of the Earth and you want to support it, again, one that is drastically different than what the vast majority of human beings on Earth actually believe, I think you're going to have to do more than just say, well, you know, this is how it is, right? Like, I have no, I don't know what reason I should have to believe that the Earth is flat. I really don't. I don't have like a single one besides it looks kind of flat when I look out, you know, but that's just like because I'm on a giant ball. So like, I mean, what, why should I personally believe in a flat Earth?
Why do you believe in a spinning space ball?
Well,
because
I mean,
of the evidence.
Do you live on a model? Do you live on a model or a simulation or a map, or do you live through observation and experience? Which do you live in?
Well, both. I mean, I have to work with models and understand that.
Do you live in a model, map, or simulation? Yes or no?
Yes. I mean, the United States as an entity isn't a physical entity, but I exist within it. For that to have any meaningful sense, I have to have an understanding of abstractions. For example, I live in Austin, Texas. Can you point to me on the globe a physical, a rock or a water molecule that's Austin, Texas? No, it's an abstraction. So yeah, I do understand abstractions to have some relevance to my life. And a map and a model are also abstractions.
And beliefs aren't things that you choose either. These are things you've been convinced of. And for me, the evidence about the globe and its reality has convinced me. So that those are the things I believe.
We think it's evidence. A ball, though it measures flat. We think the Earth spins, though we don't feel it. We think the Earth moves around the sun, though we can't measure it. We think water curves around the ball, though we can't see it. We think light curves in the medium of air, though we can't prove it. We think gravity exists, though we can't explain it. We think there's a universe, though we can't verify 95% of it, dark matter, dark energy. We think we are smart, though we are actually
Jim, I got to stop you. Are you reading off of a meme right now? Or do you have this memorized?
I am reading off of my research and my brain. Yeah.
Is your research a JPEG you found on Facebook? Because if it is, that is not research.
Us slurfs have brains. You have no empirical or physical evidence anytime that you live on a ball. Nimrod tried to go up to the sky, to the sun. Hermes Trismegistus, he was sun worship. Yeah. Copernicus was sun worship. Copernicus, on the evolution of heavenly spheres, talked about Hermes Trismegistus. You had,
but how does that
you
prove
had,
that the Earth is flat?
You had new. Yeah. You had new.
Jim, we gotta have a conversation here. Listen, Demon Stride brought up a good point. You can talk about problems in a globe Earth model all day, perceived problems. We believe in a globe Earth, by the way, just to put that out there. But that doesn't actually demonstrate the claim that the Earth is flat, right? Just because you're negating one thing doesn't actually prove the other. Like, I am interested, and again, I don't know if you quite answer this. Why should I believe the Earth is flat as opposed to any other model?
First of all, we don't live on a model. Just like that thing behind you that is tilted flat and having water come off the edge of it is not a model. I'm gonna do this for Demon, because by the time we have our little talk on March 11th, I am going to have, maybe, if I'm lucky, I'm going to have at least a half hour of my Nikon P1000, which I just got, looking across Benton Harbor, Michigan, to Chicago, 62 miles at 30 feet observation height. It should be 2,038 feet worth of bend. Now, it should be your physical horizon, should be 6.71 miles. I will be able to see nine times.
Okay, so Jim, listen, I got gotta listen. We gotta speed up this thing a little bit. Okay.
Is it safe to say this is something you're going?
I'm sorry, Demon. Sorry. I'm gonna ask this real quick. This is something you're going to do in the future. You haven't done this yet. What do you have right now?
I have the fact that you don't have anything for empirical and physical evidence.
Again,
your bulk.
Jim, I have to reiterate the fact that even if I couldn't demonstrate that the Earth is a globe, doesn't prove that the Earth is flat. What do you have that demonstrates that the Earth is flat?
There is not one engineer, engineering, blueprint, or construction of any highways, any canals, any railroads, any pipelines, anywhere that you can find that factor in 8 inches per mile squared. There is no experiment to show motion of the Earth around the sun. There is none. If you had a ball...
There is. There is. The Michelson-Morley experiment did try and test for that, and it was using the orbit around the sun. So either they were, you know, extremely false in what they thought they were testing, or they thought that they were orbiting the sun, and you're using that experiment, it seems, to prove flat.
Do you know what Michelson-Morley is?
Is
it a PSYOP? Are you going to say it's a PSYOP, Jim?
Michelson-Morley, 1887, two people they believed that lived on a ball, shot a light going with the direction of the Earth, shot another light going perpendicular to the direction of the motion of the Earth, and it should have the perpendicular should have ran behind it. They found out it ran at the same speed. It didn't have to catch up. So Michelson-Morley said the motion of the Earth around the sun is nil. Einstein, 1922, said he came up with special relativity in 1905 to explain away, you know, the nil result of the motion going around the sun. Guys, Demon, I like you. We're going to talk in a couple weeks. Guys, I eat your script for dinner. And if you ever want to get on to a three-hour debate with
me. First of all, no, I'm going to mute you for that one. Sorry. Actually, I'm going to let you go. Jim, you literally read off a picture. You're the one with a script, bud. Like, I'm coming off this stuff off the fly, okay? Like, in my past experience talking with flat earthers. You are literally reading the information that's being fed to you in your groups, my man. Like, what are you talking about? I don't know. Listen, I get it. There's weird things about cosmology that don't make intuitive sense, but like, that doesn't mean it's not true, right? And I don't know. I don't know. It's cool that you're doing experiments and figuring some stuff out, but you clearly already have this belief. I'd really investigate as to why a flat Earth model in particular has more explanatory power than anything else, because I think there are explanations for literally every single question that you brought up, right? Every single point you made. I think there's things you may not be convinced by it. That's fine. But like, there are things out there. Yeah, anyway,
to say there's no evidence is just flat face.
Yeah. I mean, that's silly. That's silly. I guess if you think every single person that's ever gone to space was lying, I mean, sure, but it's still something to think about. And also, I really want to talk about like what stars are and other cosmic bodies. But I think
we should have asked Shane that.
I think we have one other flat earther that wants to talk to us. So we might just make it all flat earth today. And I'm sorry, because I like, this is so funny because Demon Stride was like, I really hope we talk about other stuff besides flat earth. and now we're doing this to him. So I'm really sorry for that. But before we get to our next call, okay, real quickly, I want to let you guys know about the email address, of course, truth@atheisthivingcommunity.org. And there is a Facebook group as well that you should check out. It's run by fans for fans. You can go to tiny.cc/FBTWG. Flat Earthers, I'm talking to you. You want to talk your stuff? No. You want to evangelize? You can try talking about it with the Facebook group people. That's fan run. So, you know, their rules are what's best there, but you know, try seeing what you can do with that. I don't see it here in my notes here, but we also have, of course, a store with merchandise that you should definitely check out. That of course, is always available to look at. We got our t-shirt of the month this month, which is Thank Science, Not God. Very atheist, super atheist heavy this month, but you know, we gotta have at least one, right? So check that out. And also, of course, all the other merchandise that we have in the store here. Demon Stride, I think I see at least one other flat earth caller.
I'm bracing.
We gotta take the name. Okay, we got Kiwi who's calling in from Canada. Kiwi, you're live on Truth Wanted. What's up?
How's it going, buddy?
Very good. Thank you for the invite, Demon Stride, and thank you for hosting Dan and co-hosting Demon Stride. Guys, thank you. Hi.
Hi, what's up? So I see specifically, you talked to the call screener, you asked, how do you contain a medium with an observable pressure gradient? Is that specifically what you want to know from us?
That's my question for you guys.
Okay, Demon Stride, you've had this conversation before, so yes. What do you think?
How do you contain the medium with a pressure gradient gravity?
How would you demonstrate gravity?
Locally demonstrating gravity, I would probably use, what's that column? It's different fluids in a, it's a buoyancy or density column. And when you drop it, all of those different layers immediately become unorganized because they are no longer being pulled to their respective density by gravity. Now they are in false.
Okay, so we can just say like an observation, honey and water as an example, throw in vinegar if we want to be creative and start realizing there's some kind of a buoyancy, observable buoyancy that starts to introduce itself.
Yep.
All right. So the characteristics of each independent, i.e. the honey, the water, the oil, if you will, you take away their observable characteristics, i.e. their weight, and you simply plaster it, label it with the idea of gravity.
Well, we can link back to what Shane said about electrostatics causing things to have a downward vector. If that's what's causing these things to organize in a gradient, why, when you drop it, do they all mix around? They should stay in their specific gradient.
The issue that I'm having with that is that whether you interact in, you know, I love to go to this example, but whether I interact with something that weighs 10 grams an ounce, all the way up to 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 50 pounds, 200 pounds on a bench press, these things are all functions of what you call gravity, but these independent characteristics of the individual things that are being assessed, their weight is being removed, and you're simply saying that it's gravity. Is that correct?
Well, their weight isn't being removed. Their weight is still there. It's still being pulled downward, except they are now in free fall. And if you imagine the things stacked together, right? At no point, if it's electrostatics, should they mix, because electrostatics pushing the top layer onto the next layer, and it keeps going down through the density. It should just drop like a stack of pennies or a stack of quarters, dimes, and nickels, all in their respective sizes.
Gotcha. Now, question being, looking at the idea of kinetic versus potential energy, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, this one always bugged me as a kid because I didn't quite understand how something sitting on a table could be potential energy. But I mean, the fact that it has potential to do energy would explain, you know, why the thing could fall, right? Like it has a potential to do it. I don't know. What's your
Well, that's and ideally, and I really appreciate the fact that you asked me that, because we take, for instance, a 100-pound weight, a 100-pound rock, whatever. We get into the helicopter, we burn the fuel, we reach altitude, 1,000 feet, we drop that weight. We know, potentially, I'm not really in a place where I'm going to work out the mathematics to it, but I'm assuming that probably that item will reach terminal velocity at some point in time. But the main thing that I'm observing in that entire mode is that I'm picking up that rock, I'm getting into the helicopter, I'm observing the fuel gauge drop, I'm observing the helicopter, the blades of the helicopter spin, so I know that the helicopter is doing the work. I know that the pilot is doing the work because he's controlling it, and I know that I'm holding the rock, and I'm in there, and I know that the rock has weight because my body is assessing it through vasodilation, supplying the muscles with oxygen and blood, and so on and so forth, yada, yada. We reach altitude, we release that potential energy, it becomes kinetic, and then it seeks its rest point on the earth. Now, I take that observation within the medium of air, if you will, and then I look at a diver as an example. You were present on my show the other day when I was talking about this on with respect to buoyancy. But we take a diver who dives to a certain depth, right? We know that hydrostatic pressure exists. Hydrostatic pressure is not a function of gravity. Otherwise, the water would push the diver down. However, we know that the diver changes his profile. He can interact with that, again, different medium, but still a medium being water. And then he can come back to his level, the buoyancy, the water level at any point, because he knows where it is. So I'm just trying to figure out how you have two different mediums. You have an observable pressure gradient, 14.7 PSI at water level, right? And that diminishes as you go up. And I'm still in the place where I'm like, contained Dable and we're still using gravity to explain this. It perplexes me.
What are you saying is separating the air and the water? Like, what keeps them as a gradient?
Their densities. The heaviest water goes on the bottom.
Right. And why is it have a downity?
A downity?
Yeah.
Instead of an uppity. Because it has the characteristics of a weight, right? I'm not at a point where I'm ready to go to gravity because I still haven't fully ascertained how we can introduce something, right? Like it's like halfway, right? I'm going to pick up the pen and then drop it and say gravity. But what about picking up the pen? I still got to get credit for that. So what I'm saying is I'm not ready to take on the idea of gravity because it hasn't been fully demonstrated yet. Because the thing is, I know that when I pour a glass of water locally, right, that water, although, and again, I'm closing my eyes respectfully to the idea of gravity, right? And I'm just looking and I'm realizing that as I fill that cup up fuller and fuller, that water has a weight to it and that weight is growing as I pour more into it. So that's the downity, if you will. Thank you. Sorry, go ahead.
No, well, I was just clearing my throat. But also, okay, so like, you know, gravity doesn't have to be the only force that acts upon an object. I think that maybe is where the confusion is. Like, you can have, I can't remember what they're called, but you know, there are flasks that hold liquids that really move liquids that up and go all over the place, right? Like, you know, and that's another kind of pressure that I don't even know if it's pressure, actually, to be honest with you. I'm not the best person to ask about it, but like, I do know there's other physical forces at play that can act against gravity. The fact that things act against gravity doesn't mean that gravity isn't a thing, right?
Oh, yeah. So again, right, coming right back to what I said at the very beginning is, I'll use another example, a weight rack that has weights from 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 20, 30, all the way up to 50, right? Each of those things, to me, again, appear to be potential energy. I pick them up, I work with them, kinetic energy, I put them back down, potential energy, right? Again, from the standpoint of, yeah, you say there are other forces. Okay, I know that apparently there's four of them, four forces. Gravity apparently is the, quote, weakest, right? But again, my friend Dan, like from a standpoint of, I'm still looking at that individual item, and I'm saying that that is an individual item on its own. It's a red car, as an example, right? It's not to say that all cars are cars, right? If I'm able to describe something simply by stating characteristics to it, I think that I can still stay within that one lane of describing that thing, saying it has a weight of this, and this other thing has a weight of that. And that's it. Introducing gravity into that seems to be a stretch, a reach, if you will.
I would say the objects have an individual mass, mm-hmm. right? And the amount of gravity. So the gravity on Mars, the gravity on the moon is going to be different based on the masses there. So you take that same weight to one of these other planets and you will notice they don't feel like they weigh what they say they weigh on metal. So gravity can change the weight of those specific mass.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on what? Because again, you introduce Mars and
where you're located in space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're going to go to space to bring home the idea of gravity.
I mean, if you want to test out gravity as a thing, yeah, that's actually a really good way to do it, right? If you show that, hey, things on the moon fall at a different rate than most things on Earth, I'd say that actually perfectly demonstrates gravity.
So I got to go to the moon to test out gravity. Okay. Got it.
You don't have to. I'm just saying that's one thing. Again, a Demon Stride already mentioned at least one other experiment that talks about gravity and its forces. But yeah, like that's definitely not the only thing.
I don't still, from a standpoint, again, respectfully, of again how you can have air and water within an inclusion.
Why?
I believe to be, pardon me?
Why not? Why does that confuse
because
you?
Because of gravity. Because we're using gravity to bring home that idea. And I still can't, as I say, locally describe it or even demonstrate it. It's an idea, again, of picking up a pen, right?
When you put something object on a scale, are you not locally demonstrating that object has a mass?
The object has a weight. I want to check my weight. I get onto the scale. It tells me what I weigh. But then the thing about it is, are you going to build in the idea of gravity into the definition of my weight or of the person standing on the scale?
I mean, inherently, yes, because if you swayed yourself on the moon, you would show a different result.
And with you could take that same scale to the moon, right? You can go to the moon. I mean, you can sign up. They're going to be, you know, working there soon in the next 20, 30 years. I don't know if you'll be around. It's not an impossibility.
Yeah. And also, like, again, you know, the closer we get to the Earth, right? Like, you know, there's more solid things closer to the Earth. And as farther you get out, there's more gases. It's like that with literally every other planet. In fact, gas giants are exactly that. The denser gases are closer to the core of those planets. And same thing, even with the sun, like that's just how gravity works. The things that have the higher masses are going to be closer together, but the things that don't aren't.
So 14.7 PSI observable at water level. How do you theorize that to the decimal point of 0.7 is maintained with no undulation of pressure?
What do you mean? When you go underwater, first of all, I've scuba dived. I know what it's like to see a pressure differential. You do that because you're going lower towards the Earth and you're in a body of water. So the pressure is going to be increasing because the matter around you is more dense. Air is not as dense as water, but right?
It's that there's more mass of the water pressing down on.
Right, right. So, I mean, that is perfectly fine under a model that endorses gravity. I don't know why that's an issue.
Okay, again, we're not having, as I explained this earlier, when a diver interacts with water being a medium, he changes his profile, he can dive deeper, right? He wears weights, things like that. He doesn't have water pressing down on him. Hydrostatic pressure is a pressure that is exerted from all sides.
Yes, wait. But if he was horizontal to the water, his backside would be feeling more of that pressure, stomach. Or no,
yeah.
Water. Yeah.
That's how, I mean, like, that's how water bugs work, I think, right? Isn't it? They deal with the pressure on top of the water. Anyway, like, I mean, you know, we're constantly surrounded by pressure in the air. That's how we get that constant, because there is gravity and we exist on one plane of the Earth's planet, and it just, you know, we're consistent in that space. So if you go up a mountain, air pressure is going to be different, right?
Exactly. It's that the air molecules are going to have the same mass. Yeah. But the mass of the oxygen molecules are going to be the same. Its downward vector is going
to
be less.
That's why you have to wear an oxygen mask when you go up Mount Everest. I don't know why you'd have to do that under a flat Earth model.
Because you're increasing altitude, as I mentioned in my question, with an observable pressure gradient.
What is altitude?
Your elevation level.
Okay, but why does that matter as to respect to whether or not you can breathe?
Because the pressure gradient changes as you increase your altitude.
No, it's not the pressure. It's literally, there's not enough, like the air that we breathe, the air is literally different, right? We're used to a certain mixture, and that mixture changes when you get up above a mountain. Like, that's the difference.
The pressure gradient changes. The oxygen becomes less present as you go higher up. High altitude training, guys on treadmills wearing oxygen masks to restrict their breathing to help increase their lung capacity. These are things that are done. I understand the premise. I still don't. I'm putting forth the idea that you have I believe it to be a closed system. And with respect to the creation of it, as Shane had mentioned earlier, the idea of the firmament comes play.
Well, but even the globe model is a closed system. The entire universe is enclosed. So all of the processes are...
Yeah.
Enclosed or closed, Demon Stride?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say, though, it is... we exist in our local universe that is enclosed in this system. I don't know if you can get out of the
universe. So space still exists?
Yes. Also, yeah. What do you think stars and other planetary bodies are?
They're the luminaries that were created on the fourth day and put into the firmament.
Into the firmament? Like, what does that mean?
Well, I believe the firmament to be our enclosure, if you will. And the celestial bodies themselves were put in there. The moon to govern over the night, and the sun to govern over the day.
So, like, are they embedded in a substance?
I don't know. I've theorized that the firmament is comprised of something called tritium, H3, heaviest water. You could have a lake full of it, and it would look like a valley. It's that
okay.
There is evidence of things that explosive devices being launched into the sky in the 60s, Operation Fishbowl, Operation Dominic. I don't know exactly what they were doing, but yeah.
So they're in water? It's like a water.
Well, the problem
thing
with that is,
if you want to go full forth with my idea,
how do meteors work then? Where do they come from?
The thing about that is there have been no impact craters found.
What about micrometeors?
No,
you can collect them.
Meteors or fragments. I think that the things that go across the sky are nothing more than combustible fireworks, sideways fireworks that go across the sky, and we happen to see them. I think that's what
sideways fireworks.
About that.
The problem I have with the firmament 100%. You just explained is it seems like the firmament would be more dense than the air underneath it.
More dense than the air underneath it, right? But if it was, let's say it was a form of a noble gas, like a hydrogen, a form of hydrogen. Right. And it was charged in a certain manner where it could hold a certain form, right? A forgiving hand, if you will. Things hit it, rip across, create a wake like pattern, looking like a boat going across the ocean. This is where I'm at, thinking that the original creation was on day one, there was the original light. Day two, this firmament was created. This air pocket was made. The third day, the lands were brought into that space. And on the fourth day, the luminaries, the celestial bodies, were put into the firmament itself. Day five and six were things in the water, and then things on the land.
I'd be interested to see your evidence for what you claim the firmament is. Like, how did you get to that information?
Yeah,
my main observation or observable with that is the Falcon 9 rocket launch. I go to that quite often just because of the fact that when the booster portion of the rocket breaks off, there seems to be ripples that are created in the sky. And I mean, again, putting just the idea forward of H3 tritium, the heaviest water, as an idea, right? And then I have this rocket with, again, the boosters create this like ripple in the sky itself. All of a sudden, the idea of the heaviest water starts to come front and center.
I mean, again, I don't know how stars work then, if they're like in water. It seems like that doesn't make sense unless they're
like, they would get displaced twinkle every time a meteor.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, again, I had to look this up. I did see this the other day. Anne Elizabeth Fowler Hodges, first woman to be hit by a meteorite. And according to this story. Oh, okay. So she's a psyop too. So I'm wondering, when would you ever accept evidence? If I got hit by a meteorite tomorrow, are you just going to assume point blank that I'm also a psyop? Or what would I need to convince you that it actually happened to me?
Not at all. You have to understand that I mean, throughout the show, I heard you talk about belief, right? And yes, please understand that you're speaking to somebody who believes in creation, right? I can go through, I have gone through publicly the 7 days and how they break down and what got brought in where. So from a standpoint of where I am, I'm standing solidly on the foundation of my beliefs as such with observable that I have. So from a standpoint of you bringing forward an idea that somebody got hit by a flying rock, bro, somebody got hit by a flying rock. It happened. I don't know. I just have to figure out how did that rock get the energy to get up into the sky, right? To get the energy to knock that person in the skull, number one. That's the first question I have. Or secondly, is the ceiling falling apart? Is the ceiling creating meteors itself? I don't know, right? But again, from a standpoint of being in an enclosed system protected by water, I don't know how that rock gets the energy to start moving and hitting people in the head.
If you were to find a way to understand how meteors exist, would this shake your belief about the firmament?
Absolutely not.
Why?
Just because, again, Demonstrate, I said earlier that I would have to figure out how that rock got the energy, right, to begin its flight path, right? Its parabola. I can't even say it right, so I won't even say it. But its trajectory, right, through the air and so on. But that is just one piece of the entire thing to be considered of. So I can't see evidence of meteors shaking my the foundation that I'm standing upon.
But what if I told you that bodies in space with no other forces acting upon it will continue to move in space, right? Like that seems to be a pretty understood idea in science, right? In space, if you just keep moving, you're going to keep going. Unless another force acts upon you, nothing's going to stop, right? And like energy can happen. First of all, the only reason why we even have energy on Earth is because of the sun, right? Like, you know, stars have to give us energy to form the matter that we have, but also like everything that we do here. So, you know, the fact that stars even exist, and stars can be explained through gravity and other kinds of forces. I don't know. I think that what you're asking is pretty explainable. I mean, have you Googled or have you looked at where meteors come from? What most people say they come from? Do you not find that convincing?
Not at all. Because again, impact craters. Right? The evidence of rocks creating an impact crater, you know, where's the rock that created that impact crater? And like, again,
do you believe that those craters were created by meteors or asteroids?
Or do you think God created the craters?
The actual impact craters themselves, right? The trails, there's no trails of showing a meteor coming in and the actual impact path it would make into the ground. Right. And then the actual meteor itself, evidence of the meteor itself, where is it? And that's the tough part that I'm having from.
Well, they found at the center of some of these.
Exist, number one. Sorry.
At the center of some of these craters, they've actually found what would be the fragments or the leftover of the asteroid. So, I mean, there is evidence for impact craters and material being there sufficient for. But like the rock, the whole rock isn't going to be there. Like there's energy imparted into that crater.
Yeah. Anyway, look, we're already over time here, Kiwi. We got to end the show.
So much.
We usually wrap it up at 8:30.
Yeah, thanks for calling in, man. It's really fun.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
No problem. No problem. Have a good day. So I'm really sorry, Demon Stride, because you wanted to talk to other people, and we ended up making this a flat Earth that we had like three other callers wanted to talk to us, but I couldn't. You have to understand. I couldn't. Cool. Pass up this opportunity. You understand? I mean, it's not every day you get to talk to people who believe in flat Earth. I mean, yeah, I've talked to them before, but it's very infrequent.
Flat Earthers every.
I know this is your thing, but you know what? That's why you're here. Sly can talk to them, right? Tell you what, next time, Demon Stride, next time you come on, we won't take any flat Earth calls.
No, we'll take at least some flat Earth calls.
You want to take? Okay, we can take some flat Earth calls, but this is my promise to you. We'll take more than just flat Earth calls next time you come on, because I'd love to have you on again. I think this was a really good time, and I could tell the disappointment of you wanting to talk to other kinds of beliefs and stuff, but I had to do it. I had to do it. But anyway, thanks again for being on. If people want to find you, Demon Stride, where can they go?
You can go to medicinalmass.com. I host a plethora of podcasts on there. You can also find me on YouTube. I don't have much up there. There's one song that I made with these little pocket operators, electron music, at search for Demon Stride.
Yeah, yeah. And again, flat earthers watching or new people watching, this is Truth Wanted. We're live every week. If you notice, I give a lot of time to people who have other beliefs than me. You don't always see that. So if you want to have a conversation with me and my guests for next time, that's totally fine. I like doing that stuff because I want to know what you think and why. And this was certainly a memorable episode for myself. I of course want to thank the wonderful, fantastic crew for making this show happen every single week. We'll switch to the crew cam here and show you all the hard work that goes on behind the scenes, including the poor call screener who has to take all these other calls that we didn't get to today, because we spent a lot. That was a lot longer than normal for a lot of these calls. But like, I'm fascinated. It's a fascinating phenomenon. And you know what? I want to understand what they believe, because you know, if I don't want to straw man people, I understand this isn't actually what a lot of people in the flat Earth community. But okay, it's just a picture, guys. Okay. I'm sure you guys have seen worse, but regardless, this is a show where we talk about what people believe and why. And I think we successfully did that today. Just to reiterate, the question of the week is, in one sentence, what is the best pickup line? So please comment below the video before you go. And Demon Stride is going to be hanging out with me in the Discord for an after show. So check out that Discord link if you want to hang out with us. We'll answer some questions there and have a good time. This has been a really fun episode of Truth Wanted. Remember to always keep wanting the truth, and I'll see you next time.
Have you ever wanted to be a host on an ACA show or be the one calling the shots behind the scenes? Are you in Austin, Texas, or at least Austin adjacent? Well, on Saturday, February 25th, make your way down to the Free Thought Library because we'll be holding open auditions for show hosts and orientations for prospective crew members. For those wanting to be hosts, you'll be able to sit in the studio where our shows are broadcast, and we'll put you through your paces to see if you can be one of the new personalities of the ACA. For future crew members, you'll get hands-on experience using the equipment used for broadcast and will help us record the host auditions. If you've ever dreamed of being part of the ACA Productions, then this is your chance to show us what you've got. This event is free. For more information and registration, visit tiny.cc/ACA auditions.